I want to take a sidebar from this, because when we think about what just happened with Donald Trump getting elected president and people's reaction to it, friends who are saying they have to leave the country, friends who are saying they're going to mess with the Obamacare and their health care situation is going to be very, very uncertain, and it scares them mm-hmm. about that. But you're saying, I mean, you used the word cheerful nihilism. Mm-hmm. It would seem to me that cheerful nihilism would also go along with things like a neo-fascist being elected president of the most powerful country on the planet.
Well, there are two answers to that. First of all, that, you know, the avant-garde always had this side that was neo-fascist, you know, like Marinetti, for example. Right. But the other side of it is that I keep hearing, because we, you know, we come from the perspective of art, and I keep hearing artists, even some Cuban artists who live in the U.S., who say, particularly, I'm going to give you the name, Tania Bruguera, who say, okay, now it's not the moment anymore to create symbolic art. Now it's the moment to create art that would have a social, political impact. And that, to me, is very worrisome, because it sounds very communistic.
Propaganda.
It sounds very, it's actually limiting the power of art.
Narrowing the aesthetic bandwidth. Yes. This is our response to narrow the aesthetic bandwidth.
Yeah. So
dangerous.
So we should be doing the exact opposite, opening it up. There is a beautiful book by Krzysztof Ziarek. I don't know if you read it. It's called The Force of Art. And I would say one of his theses is that art should not be an alternative power. Art should be an alternative to power. So thinking of art only as an alternative power, I think that's where the problematic comes when it comes to the trying to effect change with art.
And one of the conclusions of one of the Borges stories that you mentioned in the book is translating. That's what you might as well busy yourself with translation. Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at it, it's a pretty revolutionary act. When you look at it, it has a very political kind of thing. And it's in a way, the complete opposite of xenophobia, because you're getting to learn another culture better. Mm-hmm. I mean, without translation, you don't have the Bible, which may or may not be a good thing in your perspective. talk to us about that part of the book where Borges' conclusion in the book is to do translation.
Mm-hmm. In the English version of the book, the subtitle is Senses of Distortion. But that's actually the title in Spanish, Sentidos de la Distorsión. And I use sentidos, senses, in three different ways. I use senses as in terms of direction, sense in terms of perception, and sense in terms of and meaning, in terms of signification. No, so those are
what kind of sense are you making?
Yeah,
of this?
Are you making sense? Yes. Where are you going, and what are you feeling? Yeah. So senses of distortion in these three senses of how our perception, our meaning, and our direction in the world is changing. So in terms of translation, I'm interested in translation because it's yet another way of making language proliferate instead of anchoring a meaning in language. So that's why that's how I understand the end of that story by Borges, Tlonuk Bar Orbis Tertius, where the world something suddenly makes sense because it's a artificially constructed world, but he busies himself with translating, which is just making language proliferate, not buying signification.
Huh.